We have just been through a wild few months and weeks. Is that an understatement? I think so. We have just seen our leadership change drastically in our nation. And we know that our values and convictions will be severely tested. The gains of the previous administration are disappearing. The freedoms that we have enjoyed for years are being eroded. Though we have not been removed yet from our land and taken hostage, as Daniel and his friends were, we have, to some degree, experienced something of a house arrest from other reasons that has made life rather interesting. And so we're at a place where we are now generally wondering what the future holds for us and our nation. We have some idea of where things are going based on the ideology of those that are in power, and unfortunately that doesn't leave us in a particularly encouraging place. We have some idea based on what has happened in the past in our nation and in other nations when certain ideologies move in the direction that they seem to be moving. We have some idea based on the predictions of Scripture because of the nature of mankind. When left to themselves, they kind of move in a particular direction. Though we do not know exactly how it will look for us personally or how soon it will take place, but we see things moving in a particular direction already. We can be sure the Lord knows how and when and where, and He has fortunately given us some insight in His Word that we can look at how things have happened in the past. There are circumstances that have some similarities that we can learn from, as in the case of Daniel and his friends, and we can see that even in the midst of a very precarious kind of situation, they were able to not only survive, but even to thrive. And so we hope we can learn from some of these experiences. And so that's what we are going to be aiming to do as we look at our text today. We began last time looking at the background to the situation of Daniel and his friends finding themselves in Babylon, removed from their home in Judah. And they are going to be put in the palace and given the responsibility to make some adjustments. And so we want to look at our text. Since the plan for them was to become incorporated into the Babylonian Empire's machinery, so to speak. So we want to think about the implications of committed resolve when put in difficult situations. Do you know how you will respond? We read in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." So that's the first thing that we want to kind of start thinking about. He purposed in his heart. So I want to think about that. Personal commitment begins before the pressure is on. The pressure wasn't on when he was at home, but maybe he had been thinking about his relationship to the Lord already. As we look at this text, it indicates something of Daniel's character. He likely had clear convictions before his capture. He was young. He was probably in his mid-teens at this time. This may be a testimony to his parental training, part of the general Judaistic mindset. And so he would have had some particular sensitivity to the Lord at this time. In particular, this focused on ceremonial purity. This would not have been a concern necessarily to everyone, but there were those of the Jews who were the most faithful who would have wanted to be ceremonially pure at all times in all ways. It likely would have also assumed an element of moral purity as well. But the idea is that Daniel wanted to please the Lord in every aspect of his life. He was committed to that, and he was willing to go out of his way to pursue that commitment, to follow through with it. And so he apparently took the initiative, and it appears his friends followed along. We don't know if he had to coerce them or if they were perfectly willing to go along. It would seem that that may have been the case. Though sometimes peer pressure is necessary in some contexts, because you may not want to do something all by yourself, and so you seek to get someone to go along with you. And peer pressure, as we know, can be a very negative thing, and often is, but it can also be a good thing in the right context. And that's where I think Christian fellowship is helpful and necessary, because we can encourage each other in various things to keep us focused in the right direction, and that seems to be part of the case here. So somebody needs to take the lead in doing the right thing. And, of course, we find ourselves in very challenging situations today, and there are opportunities to move forward and make right decisions and do the right thing. And discernment is always needed to know what is the right thing in the right context. Sometimes the right thing can be done in the wrong way or at the wrong time. And so we need to have discernment. So everyone has convictions. Everyone has convictions about different things. Sometimes it's a conviction about what kind of car you will drive. And I know some people who are very adamant. They will drive this kind of car. They will not drive that kind of car. They have a conviction. I don't think that's necessarily a virtuous matter. But there are convictions that are, and Daniel seems to illustrate some of them. So we need to make sure that we have convictions for the right things, and that we have discernment to know which things in the right way at the right time. Well, this text also indicates something of Nebuchadnezzar's character. We haven't spent a whole lot of time thinking about him. We will yet in the future. He will be mentioned various times coming forward. But it does indicate that he had concern for the well-being of those that he had taken captive. And, of course, that was not without purpose, because he had some intention, but he was wanting the best for them, not the least for them. And so he probably ought to be commended for providing more for them than just what would be expected for mere prisoners, which would probably be nothing more than bread and water. But he was wanting to share of the goodness of the things that he had, so that they would be better off and that they would be more suited to adapt and adjust to the environment that they were going into. And he had a purpose in mind for that, and as well a product that he was working toward to have them be enculturated into the Babylonian mindset. And so Daniel here is noted for having some culinary conviction, and that put him in a difficult situation, because it required some kind of response. How do you deal with this when you are asked to do something that you had convictions against doing? And so we need to think about that. He either had to compromise, or the king or his representative official had to compromise. There was no apparent middle ground. You can't have both things happening at the same time. So what were Daniel's options? Is there any way out? How do we know when to stand firm and aggressively resist, or to compromise in some form or another, or to negotiate? Well, we often don't really know. life is not usually simple and clear, and we have to discern the best we can in order to determine what is right and true, and to work with what we've got to work with, because life is not simple, and it often can be very complicated. And so our future in this world and in our nation could get very interesting in the future, and our convictions may be severely compromised, and we have even talked about matters where that has been the case with the issue of abortion and euthanasia, where there are bills in our own state legislature that are being put forward, and we need to respond in some way to those, which we can do by contacting our representatives and senators. So we need to think about what can we do in this regard. So we need to think through how we will respond in advance as much as possible. Sometimes we don't have a lot of notice to work with. So we often don't know what we will face in the future, but from what we see coming down the pike in our direction, there are probably many things that we will have to deal with, and we need to be planning in advance what decisions we will make, how we will determine what we will do, and how we can negotiate in certain contexts if we have to. How will we deal with that? So, looking at verse 9, we read, "Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs." Now that's an interesting statement right there. God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. One of the things that we see throughout the book of Daniel is that God is orchestrating things in the direction that he wants them to go through various people to accomplish what he wants to have accomplished. And even though his people were not in political power, the Lord was still at work. And we do well to remember that in our situation as well. Personal commitment is a pathway to divine affirmation. Being rightly related to God may provide practical help. Following God's principles usually brings benefits, because that's kind of what has been communicated in Scripture. It's not always 100% one-to-one correspondence, but often it is the case. If you follow God's principles, he will respond, and there will be benefits that will go along with that. And generally, being cordial with others can be helpful. It's probably good not to try to make enemies. Sometimes it happens, but we generally want to try to avoid that. Jesus indicated the value of relating well to others, even when you are in tricky situations. You do well to try to work with people. And there's no guarantee of success, but it may be a means of God working through situations. If we're able to build positive relationships to gain positive results, as opposed to maybe coming off a bit more negative, or being aggressive and violent often backfires, and it can bring more harm than good. So we have to be careful to know when to press hard and when to work through things in a more rational fashion. God used Daniel's pleasant demeanor to build a positive relationship as a basis for negotiation. Now, initial antagonism would have been rather counterproductive if Daniel had just said, "Ain't no way I'm doing what you're telling me." He would have gotten into trouble. And that's probably a practical lesson for us today. Because what kind of leverage did Daniel have? He was a captive. He was young. He didn't have political power. He really didn't have anything much going, well, except that he knew the God of the universe. That's kind of helpful. But he had rapport with this one individual. And so he's going to maximize that. And so there are times when building positive relationships around us, even with those who don't agree with us, can be beneficial for future opportunities of negotiation and working with. So, for instance, when any of us have opportunity to contact our representatives or senators, whether state or national, how should we come across? As belligerent? That's how we want to, because we're so upset and passionate about things, but it doesn't help. It usually is counterproductive. So there's an element of maybe we need to be a little cautious as to how we go, because our emotions can drive us in a direction that can be counterproductive. So we need to be careful not to thwart our purpose or to somehow negate the potential capital that we might have for reaching out to others and to make a positive impact for good. So in this case, we have clear evidence that God was at work. God worked the situation for Daniel to have favor and goodwill with those that did not share his convictions. And so I would say maybe there's a lesson here. Maybe there's something that we can gain from this. Rather than simply just get angry, even though that's kind of how we tend to be moved in that direction, and cause antagonism and lose any potential rapport, we may need to see if we can utilize whatever point of contact we may have. And I know I can be as guilty of this as any in terms of wanting to resist and argue and scream and holler and all this sort of thing. But that doesn't particularly help. We need to see, okay, how can we be most effective in accomplishing what we need to accomplish when we find ourselves pressured by situations around us? Can we utilize any point of capital that we may have as far as having some impact for good? And as believers, we want to be able to do that. We want to be those who are known for being level-headed and right and true on the basis of the principle, and not just get caught up in the passion, because that doesn't always work in our favor. There comes a point in time where there's no other recourse, which we will see down the road, but at this point, there may be options, and we want to utilize those when we can. Daniel chapter 1, verse 10, we read, "And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink.'" In other words, I'm accountable to somebody else, and I've got pressure on me, and now you're putting pressure on me, and I'm in a difficult spot. "For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." So the chief here is expressing his legitimate concerns. You are expressing your commitments, your belief system, those things that are important to you, but now you're putting me in a difficult spot. How am I supposed to deal with that? Personal commitment will always affect others around us, and we need to be aware of that. The expression of Daniel's conviction affected others. It affected those friends of his. They had to either agree or disagree with him. It turns out they did agree with him, and they wanted to go along with this, but it did put the chief in a rather difficult spot. Now, Daniel is free to have his own personal convictions, but it becomes problematic when it conflicts with someone else's convictions and belief system, and we see that around us a lot today as well. So how do we deal with that? I have my convictions, somebody else has their convictions, they are completely antithetical. How can we work through that? So, likewise, the expression of the chief's conviction affected Daniel because he had concerns. He was concerned for his own well-being. He was trying to do his job. He was trying to please the king. And Daniel was asking him to make an exception to the rule. The chief then had to deal with that. Do I make an exception for this guy? But if I do, it's going to be evident because he's wanting to do something that is inconsistent with what the results, the intended results are. So that could be a problem. So the issue that Daniel was dealing with was not, in one sense, a moral issue per se. It was more of a ceremonial issue. It was keeping the ceremonial law in terms of eating some things and not eating some things and, you know, keeping up the kosher expectations that they had. And it was a big concern to Daniel because he wanted to honor the Lord and be consistent in that regard. But it was also a big deal for the chief in this case because he needed to honor the king. And he wanted to keep his job and he wanted to keep his head. Because kings in those days were noted for making swift decisions about what to do with somebody who defies you. So was this an impossible impasse? How would they come to terms on this seemingly unworkable situation? Because they both had convictions and they were serious about it. How do you deal with that? Could there be some other workable situation? So here we want to think about the value of a reasoned proposal. Verses 11 through 13. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he's sort of laying it out there. How about if we try this, and then if it works out, great. If it doesn't, well, then do with us what you feel you need to do with it, do to us. There may be value in making a request and not a demand. Here he has his conviction, and he says, is there some way we can work with this? That's probably better than saying, no way, Jose, to somebody who has total authority over you and has your life in his hands. Daniel and his friends were in a subservient position. They did not have the upper hand. They did not have any power. They did not have control of any particular resources. They were rather helpless. They were in a very vulnerable position. They had zero political capital except the chief's interest in them, and they were seeking to take advantage of this one resource, the chief's favor. And they had this favor because of being faithful to the Lord. And so it's interesting, that's the one resource they had. Isn't that the same resource that we have? Being faithful to the Lord? Will he work with us through whatever situations we come up with, even if we don't have political power? And sometimes, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes we're probably better off not being in political power because then we tend to trust the political power rather than trusting the Lord. And maybe there's something to be gained in terms of our own spiritual dependence in that process. Daniel made a time-sensitive and reasoned proposal. His request was specific and it was measurable. And if you've done any management studies, you know that's kind of important to have those things. Make your goals specific and measurable. There was a time frame. There was a way to measure There was a result that was indicated. They needed to be able to be comparable to the other people that would have had the king's regular food. And there was a 10-day time frame to evaluate, according to the others. His request was made respectfully and reasonably. And we have actual footage of this going on right there. He asked in a respectful way and asked politely. Every indication seems to be that that's the case. He asked for something that was easily possible if the results could be achieved. And this may be a reminder for us to seek workable alternatives before resorting to more aggressive or even violent reactions. There may be some value in that. And there may be value in asking for less and not more. When you're in a position where you don't have leverage, how do you deal with that? The concern about the food seems to have been related to idolatry. The concern was more about what the food represented than the actual food. The common practice was to offer food to idols in Old Testament times, but in the New Testament it's talked about as well. This was a concern that Paul addresses in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians 8, 4-8, he says, "Therefore, concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is no other God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many gods and many lords, in people's thinking at least, yet for us there is one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we for him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom are all things, and through him we live." So he's pointing out, yes, there are foods that are offered to idols, but we know that an idol is really not anything anyway, so we really don't have to worry about it. However, he continues on, "there is not in everyone that knowledge." Not everybody views it that way. "For some, with consciousness of the idol, until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. But food does not commend us to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, nor if we do not eat are we the worse." Now, this is in New Testament times, so this is where they were not under the law anymore. Now, Daniel was still under the law. He was still living according to, so there was a difference there. But you can see the basic idea of there are those who, when they relate to the idea of food offered to idols, that's a problem, I can't go there, and I resist that. In 1 Corinthians 10, 25-26, we read, "Eat whatever is sold in the meat market, asking no questions for conscience' sake, for the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness." In other words, it's the idea of don't knowingly be offended here. It would also include food that was unclean or not kosher. That would have been a concern, obviously, that Daniel would have. There were some things that were just off limits that you just didn't eat because it had been part of the law. Now in the New Testament times, that's not the case, so we recognize there's a difference. And in our day, they did not want to violate their own conscience. It was not about following a particular health food diet. Now, we live in a day when health food diets are, I think they say, a dime a dozen, or maybe more than that. I mean, there's tons of them, all kinds of them. And at every turn, you're being told, don't eat this, don't eat that, do eat this, don't eat, and on and on. I mean, that's what we're dealing with all of the time. How do you know what is appropriate? Well, in the New Testament, it's clear that all foods are appropriate, barring any particular food allergies or things of that nature that you have to deal with. And let me just go through a few different passages here. I'm going to summarize a few of them and quote a few. Luke 12:23 says, "Life is more than food." Now, when you're really hungry, it's hard to imagine that, but I think that's still true. Acts 10:13-15 says, "And a voice came to him," that is to Peter, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "Not so, Lord." Now, I don't think you want to say that too many times. "Not so, Lord." That doesn't go over well. "For I have never eaten anything common or unclean." And a voice spoke to him again the second time, "What God has cleansed, you must not call common." And so that was the beginning of the official word from the Lord that you don't have to follow those food rules of the past, and that also includes you can reach out to the Gentiles. It's not just about the Jews. In Romans 14:15-20, it talks about avoiding offending by what you eat. There is a need to restrain one's personal liberty in certain occasions, if it has to do with the opportunity to offend or not. If you have a choice and you're aware, you can be careful not to. 1 Corinthians 6:13 says God will destroy foods and the body eventually. Chapter 8 of 1 Corinthians, verse 8, food does not commend us to God. In verse 13, avoid causing a brother to stumble by your food. So you don't want to knowingly offend somebody that you know has convictions on certain things in that regard, because not everybody sees things the same. In 1 Corinthians 10:30, it says to not be offended by another's food choice, and also try to avoid offending others by your food choices. So there's, again, that matter. Colossians chapter 2, verse 16 says, "So let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths." That's pretty clear. Don't let someone judge you in matters of food or drink. 1 Timothy 4:1-5 says, "Now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from foods which God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good, and nothing is to be refused if it is received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God and prayer." So there is an anticipation of a time coming when there are many things that will be taking place, and one of them will be the talk about abstaining from food. Now, if you look at a lot of the different cults and whatnot, there's a lot of emphasis on foods to eat or not to eat and so on. And this is saying don't buy into the religious element of that kind of thinking. Now, if you have other reasons related to the quality of the food, I mean, if it's bad, don't eat it. No matter how many years it's been sitting in the meat market, kind of want to use some judgment there, or personal health issues, dealing with if you have allergies, etc., or offense issues. So there are, but it's not religious or ceremonial prohibitions that relate to us. Now, it was for Daniel, but not for us. The food requested was less costly and less productive. Now, that's an interesting thing. Productive nutritionally, I would note. The actual quality of the food was never in question. Now, some people look at it and say, "Oh, the rich food of the king, it must have been really bad stuff." No, it had produced good results in the past, so it wasn't that the food was bad. It was still the standard by which they were going to measure, so it must have been of a decent quality. The nature of the food suggested was within the parameters of ceremonial expectations. That is, what Daniel was asking for was within the parameters of what he needed to deal with as far as his Jewish food restrictions. Now, something to note here, when our English translations use the word vegetables, some go, "Oh, looky here, right here, it's in the Bible. You got to be a vegetarian. Is that what it's saying?" Well, if you use the King James as opposed to the King James says pulse. That should tell you, oh, it's probably not actually translated to be translated vegetables in a broad generic sense. The word that's translated vegetable in the New King James is a leguminous kind of vegetable like peas and beans and that sort of thing. The Hebrew word is zeroim, and it denotes all leguminous plants which are not reaped but pulled and plucked. And so it should be noted that there is value in that food, but it may not be as wholesome as what the other diet could have been. And so it was not that what Daniel was suggesting was a better quality food. Now, there may have been some items that were better than some items in the other diet, but all in all, it was probably not, it's probably actually inferior in terms of the variation that could have been available, because they didn't have multiple vitamins that you could take at the time to fill in for the deficiencies that might be there. So what that's saying is what Daniel was offering was not effective in and of itself. It would only have been effective with divine intervention. And I think that is the case. And Daniel was either depending on that or hoping for that or just wishing to avoid the possibility of defiling himself with the ceremonially unclean food that he was aware of. So I think there's probably reason to believe that Daniel may have been aware of the possibility or was hoping for the possibility that there would be divine superintending here because of his commitment to following through. And that may have been the case. At the very least, the text clearly indicates that God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill with the chief, and so it would seem reasonable that he would honor Daniel's commitment to be true to him as well. But Daniel had also indicated, if it does work, great. If not, then so be it. Then, the consequences of courteous negotiation. Verses 14 through 16. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So if this was the miracle diet, then we should probably all be eating it. But if you check it out, I think you'll see that diet probably is not as wholesome and complete as you would like it to be without divine intervention. Thus the steward took away the portion of delicacies and wine that were to drink and gave them vegetables. There is virtue in being mutually respectful. Now, we probably don't even need to say that. It just kind of goes without having to be said, but sometimes it's helpful to note that. Daniel and his friends did not put the chief in a corner. They did not give him an ultimatum and say, you've got to do this and do it our way, because they were in no position to make any kind of demands. They had no leverage. They had to be very careful, cautious, strategic, and courteous if they wanted to get any proper response at all, if they wanted to get a hearing, if they wanted to be considered in this way. It would have been very counterproductive to alienate the only person that they had any clout with in this particular case. They expressed their concern in a respectful manner. They made a proposal that was not unreasonable, except if it didn't work. Then it would be a problem. But because of the time frame that was indicated, it was workable, because there would have been time to change things accordingly if needed. So they expressed their concern in a respectful manner, and it would have been easy, perhaps too easy, to become belligerent because of the passion of the moment, to say, no way we can do that. The Bible does talk about the problem of zeal without knowledge in the book of Proverbs. And I sometimes wonder if we might have more political credibility if our position was stated more carefully in the right contexts, and perhaps in some situations that might work. But it's also the case that we might be beyond the place of having a hearing because of what has transpired in the past, and some things that have happened may have put us in somewhat of a negative light. And because we're dealing with something that is much bigger than just personal contact, being nice is often not going to make any difference, because you're dealing with, for one thing, a completely antithetical opposition, and the other thing is that you're dealing with a demonically driven opposition, and that is a bigger concern that we need to recognize, because the pagan influences that we're dealing with in our world today remind us that we are in spiritual warfare. And that song, "Am I a Soldier of the Cross," kind of points that out and reminds us of that. They provided opportunity for the chief to respond without compulsion and with a workable option without losing face. I think it's helpful in those occasions when we can do that. That's what we ought to aim for. It doesn't always work that way. It is not a guarantee. But in this case, because of the position that the chief was in, who was just trying to do his job, even though he had a worldview that was defective, he was not antagonistic toward Daniel. There was some rapport there that they could then work with. So Daniel was simply capitalizing on the only human resource that he had to work with, and he was careful not to ruin the best thing that he had going. And so there is wisdom, I think, in recognizing that we need to try to leverage what we can when we can. And we want to be able to be in a position to do the most good that we can and to not give up in spite of what the challenges are, and then ultimately to depend on the Lord. There is value in being patiently resourceful. We recognize that Daniel did not blow up or give up, but he wisely sought options. When we find ourselves in difficult situations, that's what we need to do. And when I look at our current political situation, I think, wow, we are in a tough spot in so many ways. There are so many things that are negative. You know, what do we do? Do we just, you know, close up shop and go home? Or do we start looking, are there other ways? Can we be patient and resourceful? Can we look for other means? There are many things that we can still do, and maybe it takes being put, for in our case, being put in a more difficult spot so that we step up to the occasion, and we may be able to do that. And so rather than being tempted to just give up and run for cover, we need to stand up and have resolve and look for ways in which we can accomplish what needs to be accomplished, maybe not necessarily an obvious way. And so we need to look for those opportunities and those means to try to move in that kind of direction. And so we need to have good judgment to determine what can we do and can we follow through on those things. And then he trusted the Lord to provide positive results to the test, because if you're just depending on those legumes to get you through those 10 days, that might not be enough, unless the Lord is going to provide what's needed. And in order for them to look better than the others, it had to have been the Lord working in some kind of supernatural way to bring that to pass. It wasn't just that they happened to eat the right kind of vegetable at the right time. And so I think that's another reminder of trusting the Lord. Some have said that we need to work as if it all depends on us, but we need to pray as if it all depends on God. Well, there's some truth in that. We don't want to just, you know, throw our hands up and say, God, I don't know what to do. I can't do anything. I'm just going to sit in the corner and you do it all. There may be a moment when that's the case. But on the other hand, he does expect us to be resourceful and to do what we can. Daniel and his friends followed through on the proposal. They went through the 10 days. They didn't give up before. They honored their word. They were persistent according to the commitment that they had made. And they honored the chief by being respectful to him, and they worked out this agreement. Now, what we need to remember, again, things don't always work out that way. They don't always, you don't always find the perfect workable solution between two seemingly impossible objectives that are antithetical. But in this case, it was workable, and the Lord did follow through and provide. So we are at a comparable place politically, I think, as what Daniel and his friends are, at least to some degree. We're not in a foreign country yet, but we have some of that same kind of pressure coming at us. The power structures in Daniel's day were controlled by unbelieving pagans. Formally, that's not the case in our nation, but practically it's leaning in that direction more and more. And so we're getting a taste of what Daniel and his friends had to deal with. Daniel recognized that he had limited options, but he didn't give up. He sought a way to remain true in difficult circumstances. He did not know at the time how things would turn out, but he was trusting the Lord. And his main focus was to remain true to the Lord. And no matter what the pressure was, and even though we may be pressured to conform in various things, we can see things moving in that direction. We need to decide in advance, what are we going to do when the pressure comes on? How are we going to stand up? Are we prepared to do that? Daniel's main concern was not political, but spiritual. And there may be some lesson in that as well. We do not want to come to the place where we are trusting our political machinery to accomplish what God wants accomplished through his church. And so we need to keep that in mind as well. And I think that's a lesson that we do well to learn. We can be a serious source for good, no matter who is in charge of our country or of our state. Our relationship to the Lord is not dependent on political machinations, those things that are going on around us. It's affected by it, but it's not dependent on it. And we need to be sure that we keep that in mind. And I recently came upon historical note here that I want to share in closing. It says, in the dark days of Nazi occupation of Holland, with Gestapo everywhere and Jews vanishing, Dutch Christians asked Dutch Reformed theologian, linguist, and missionary Hendrik Kramer, 1888 to 1965, what they should do. Kramer responded, "I cannot tell you what to do, but I can tell you who you are. If you know who you are, then you will know what to do." I thought that was pretty good. And then he read to the fearful Christians the words first spoken in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9 to the equally fearful Christians, where we read, "You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a people claimed by God as his own, to proclaim the triumphs of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." The result of that was the beginning of the Dutch underground resistance movement. There may be occasions for us in the future, maybe not too long from now, where we will have to stand up and deal with the pressure that's on us. And I do not look forward to that, but I do expect that no matter what comes along, if we're committed to the Lord, if we're faithful to him, we can be victorious no matter what happens, no matter who's in control, because we know who ultimately is in control and we need to trust him. So let us press on and be all the force for good and for the Lord that we can be, to remember who we are.